My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. And welcome into episode 9 of Best Dans in Baseball. Dan Buffa, Daniel Shoptaw, here after an afternoon victory in Cincinnati. Cards take the last two in the series with the Reds, looking a little bit more like a team that is 69-39, 30 games over 500. I'd have to look it up. I don't remember the last time the Cardinals were that far over 500. Do you?
You know, definitely not this season, not last. I don't think we got that much. I think we got close, maybe 26, 27, but I don't think we've been 30 over, gosh, in the last few years. I mean, the last time I remember is when we won over 100 games. When was that, 2005?
2005, they went 162, 2004, 105, and 57.
Yeah, so maybe.
You're looking in that range because none of the other years.
No.
I mean, you're looking at the most, 2013, they finished up 97-65, so they were 32 over then at the end of the year.
I mean, last couple of years, I mean, we've been playing catch up, and especially, you know, 2011, you know, we all know what we were doing then with that team, so, yeah, 30 games over 500, so, I mean, we've kind of been tasting it all week. I mean, we got to 29, and we lose, so it's kind of nice to get there, and, you know, you get a chance to kind of build on with these next few games.
Yeah, you know, you look at the winning percentage right now, it's 636. Actually, that's not counting today's win. I'm looking at that, so it's a little bit better than that, 640 or so.
God, so average.
Yeah, I know. You'd have to go back to that 2004 team, 648 to end the year.
Yeah.
This team is so different from that 2004 team. And yet, you know, if you look at the end of the year, and you hope maybe that they take a step beyond the 2014. But you know, at the end of the year, their numbers they're very well maybe similar. But you wouldn't expect it because this team is definitely not got an MV3 like 2004 did.
Yeah, I mean, this team is pretty much powered by pitching, and as far as just rotation and the bullpen. I mean, Cardinals are the best bullpen in the major leagues, and you know, it really shows in games like last night where they're battling the Reds in extra innings. And, you know, nobody likes to play the Reds in extra innings, but all it takes is a little routine fly ball in Busch Stadium that would pretty much carry out of Cincinnati's ballpark. So I was just kind of waiting for that last night. But, you know, you get big innings from Broxton, you get big innings from C-Shack and Maness. And the Cardinals this year, I mean, it isn't like their hitting is dead by any means. I mean, you have solid seasons from Johnny Peralta. Randall Grichuk is pretty much the talk of the town. I mean, they have good steady hitters. They just kind of lack that big stick, kind of like Pujols and Rowland and Edmonds were. I mean, it just, you know, you had three guys that could just strike fear in their pitcher. I think the Cardinals have a couple guys that can throw opposing pitchers off, but no big bullet. Their big bullets are all in the rotation, which is seemingly endless, and their bullpen, which every move that Mo made down there is pretty much working out just well, especially even though he had a little trouble today. I think Broxton's been a nice pickup these last few games.
Yeah, I think he looked very good last night. You know, he was pitching again. I don't know if that's his third in a row, definitely back-to-back days.
Yeah.
He struggled a little bit, not too bad, though. I mean, I think he possibly could have gotten out of it, but when you had the lefty coming up, you know, you go with choke, that's fine.
That's right.
Yeah, I like what Broxton's bringing. I like the fact, like we saw with Carlos Martinez earlier this week, we should have probably seen with Walker today. That's an interesting, it was a debate maybe we'll talk about in a minute. But Matheny has the option to pinch hit for these guys if a situation comes up, you know, not worrying about them going, you know,
turning it over to the bullpen in the sixth inning, turning it over maybe earlier than he'd want to, he can take advantage of a situation where there's a runner on second and the pitcher's up. You know, go ahead and pinch hit. He can also not worry about, you know, that's another way to save the innings on those guys' arms, because that bullpen, now we'll talk a little bit about Jordan Walden and his setback or his slowdown or whatever they want to call it now. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but that bullpen is extremely strong with veteran presence right now. It's a situation where, you know, we saw last year with the Royals, you get into the sixth inning, and if you're trailing that team, you're almost as good as dead. That's kind of what the Cardinals are looking for here, I think, and that seems to be one of the reasons that Mo went out and made the deals for Cishek and for Broxton.
You pretty much have everybody down there has like a close or a save in the last year or two. I mean, you got a lot of guys down there in Rosendahl and Cishek and Broxton. I mean, even Seth Maness, who's basically has the flexible arm, can almost do anything. He closed the game out last night. And then you have Choate, who's been pitching better. And you have all these guys who just can't really. I mean, you even have your young gun in Tui Valala, who's down in Memphis right now. So, I mean, imagine when he comes up in September when the rosters expand and you just got all these weapons down there. And I do think that we're going to see Jordan Walden before the end of the year. I think they're just kind of slowing him down because of how stacked the bullpen is and how his recovery from this injury is a little bit unique, and they don't want to push him because he is kind of he could be a vital piece. He could just be the guy that pitches the fifth inning if they need it, maybe. I don't know, maybe. But, I mean, you could really throw all these guys out, just have a bullpen game, let them all go, like, you know, an inning, and just throw hitters off completely. But, yeah, I mean, it's a great thing that Mo kind of went under the radar and got Cishek and he got Broxton, and he keeps bringing in these guys who are veterans who've been there before, and he's, you know, kind of mixing in his young guys, and Tui Valala and Sokolovich is kind of hanging around. But, yeah, I mean, I think you do have to kind of start thinking about, you know, giving some rest. I mean, Waka has obviously had two good starts in a row now. But Carlos Martinez, you know, these guys, I mean, they're just so important to your future and so important in a playoff series that you don't want these guys hitting a wall. So, anytime, I mean, I'm not one of those people that goes, oh, he has to pitch seven innings, you know, in order to be a really good start. I mean, right now with this staff, the way they pitch and the bullpen, the way they are, I'll just take quality starts. I mean, you get these guys through six innings and you have a chance to pile on more runs. I think you take that chance. And I think Matheny's going to hopefully start doing that because you don't want to have to lose one of these guys, you know, right before the playoffs start. I mean, these guys, they're just too important and they're young and they both have those kind of arms that haven't really stretched in this deep into a season, especially in the major leagues, as far as this many innings. So you really want to be, you know, careful with that. And any time you can put a couple more runs on the board with this team, you got to take that chance.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the case. You know, we were talking this is the fourth show I've done this week, so I tend to forget.
I know, you were like pushing the limits of, you know, of knowing if you're talking on a podcast or just talking regular.
I just start talking sometimes and I don't know if it's recorded or not.
Is it recording or not?
Yeah, it's one of those things, trying to defy my age, I guess. But anyway, you know, the point was made kind of by Mo Zalok that he did this trading of Broxton and Cishek, at least in some regard, if you read between the lines, it's basically he didn't think Matheny would trust the young guys. And so he went out and got veterans, so he's not using Sechrist and Maness and Rosendahl every single time. I don't know what I think about that. I mean, to some degree, it's good that the general manager pays attention and he knows this stuff. On one hand, are you enabling the manager if he's not paying it? Because, you know, I think we've talked about it. Sokolovich and Tui Valala had gotten to the point, I think, where you could trust them fairly well. I mean, heck, Sokolovich, I think his debut was in extra innings. You know, he found himself in that situation a lot of times.
Yeah, I think it was against Milwaukee, that long extra inning game, I think.
Yeah, and Tui Valala, after his second call-up, had really been pretty effective and to the point where I don't think very many Cardinal fans were really worried about him coming in the seventh or eighth if they had to. So, you know, in some degree you already had these weapons and you're going out and trading for more of the same. You know, I don't know. What do you think about that?
You know, I mean, I kind of liked the Broxton move a little bit more, and I like that he. I mean, I guess I don't see a problem in bringing in guys. I mean, you don't want to overcrowd the pen. I mean, you don't want to push guys out. I mean, I didn't want to see Tui Vilala sent back down. I thought that he was just getting better and better. I mean, he really opened my eyes when he went into Pittsburgh right before the All-Star break, and he shut the Pirates down in a couple of key outings. And I like Sokolovic too. And I just think that – I think Mozeliak was just kind of taking a chance and picking some guys up and not really having to give up a lot. And Broxton, I like what he does. I think he's – I mean, the guy hasn't a run since the All-Star break. He's definitely been pitching really well. C-Sheck's a guy – I mean, maybe it's just the way that I'm just weary of guys who throw sidearm as far as just – I mean, they just always make me nervous. I know we just had a guy in Petnicek who was really good, but C-Sheck is a guy that I don't really know. I mean, I know he hasn't allowed – he's allowed one run, in his six innings of work, but – he kind of makes me more nervous. I mean, I understand why he was picked up, but I do see your point of not wanting these young guys to be blocked, and I really hope when September comes around, if you have C-Sheck who's kind of having up and down outings, and you're going to put him out there because he has experience in Miami over a guy like Tui Vilala who could be a big weapon down the stretch, I'm going to have a problem with that. I mean, if Broxton and C-Sheck are throwing really well and they're helping out the pen, and you can kind of, move, kind of stretch these younger guys out a little bit slower, it's fine. I just don't want to see Matheny leading on guys who aren't pitching well because they have experience. That does worry me in a race that's not exactly tight with the Pirates yet, but they can, they can easily flip it around and be three or four out. So I don't think Matheny should really just trust the veteran, trust that with C-Sheck and Broxton that they run into some trouble. You have to trust the guys that you've grown up in your system yourself, that pitch very well in tight games. I would trust the youth over experience, especially if one's pitching better than the other. To me, it's just all about who's pitching better. If C-Sheck's having a very rough week in September, he shouldn't be out there in a close game against the Pirates. I mean, you need to go with your better pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's not that option but once rosters expand, you probably will have that. The good thing is, I mean, you're talking, 3 weeks, a little bit more until rosters do expand.
Yes.
And so odds are he can't rely on these guys going bad. I mean, it's not going to be an extended period of time when they're going to be bad, let's put it that way, because there's just not that much time left and they're not going to pitch every day. They look good so far. Yeah, they're going to have their ups and downs to some degree. I mean, they're not going to be perfect. They may hit a glitch here and there, but we see that with everybody.
Yeah.
The bullpen in September is just going to be nuts.
It's going to be nuts. I mean, the main thing I think about with these guys is maybe Seth Maness's arm doesn't fall off in mid-September. I think that the main thing I thought when he got these couple guys and he had the young guys, maybe Seth Maness doesn't have to pitch every day.
Yeah, I'm hopeful with the Cardinals, right now six games up on the Pirates. You hope that they stay around that, say they're six or seven up in September. That can give Matheny the chance to really rely on people that he's not going to rely on in October. He can rest Maness and pitch him once or twice a week, and he can rest Rosenthal, he can rest Seacrest. Because you're going to have guys like Tui Vilala and Sokolovic, and then you're going to have guys, that can pitch like Cooney and Lyons that can come in and pitch two or three innings to guys. You hope to have Walden back. You're going to have to pitch him a bit to get him into a groove. You never know with Matt Belisle. It seems, I don't know, I'd be kind of surprised if he's back, but if so, that's another arm that you've got.
Yeah, he's almost like John Jay. It's kind of like that toss up in the air. I mean, I just don't see him being rushed back. Kind of like Walden. I think he's less more likely than Jordan Walden coming back.
Yeah, I think Walden's probably more. He could be back maybe by the end of the month. Belisle, it sounds like if he's back, it'll be mid September, and probably isn't going to be on the playoff roster, just because of what he would need to get back to health.
Yeah.
The bullpen for the playoffs is going to be fairly interesting.
Very interesting.
Depending on who's healthy.
Yeah, because who really leads? You also have a starter who's going to lead your rotation going to the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And who's that going to be? I was asked that question. I was kind of stumped Because the first part I thought is if Martinez is pitching as good as he has, I don't want to move him down there. But he has experience, and the way Waka was pitching, I almost wanted to move him down there. So I was kind of like, when somebody asked me the other day, and I was like, give me some time. I mean, I kind of had to sit back and go, man, really, who wants to lead? Because you want, if Garcia's pitching well, Garcia's never went to a bullpen. So, I mean, I don't think he's really accustomed to it. If he's standing upright in October, he needs to be starting. And, of course, that's Lynn and Lackey, those guys. But really, when it comes down to that fourth guy, you know, is it Martinez or is it Waka? If they started today, who would you go with?
I don't know. That is a tough question, like you say.
It's tough.
I like the fact that Waka has been a starter in the postseason before.
Yeah.
Of course, Waka's right now running a 14-game scoreless streak, seems to be kind of back on the horse.
Mm-hmm.
We know what Carlos Martinez can bring, but we also have seen it out of the bullpen. And at times, he can be... You know, if I had to flip a coin, I'd probably say Martinez in the bullpen, but that's, I mean, you're not going to go wrong either way. I'm with you.
I mean, I think I initially answered Waka, then I was like, yeah, you know, the way he pitched in the playoffs. Now, we got to exclude what happened last year, because that was not Michael Waka. That was like
well, he only threw five pitches, so it didn't really count. So,
you know,
whatever.
He basically got, you know, Ishigawa a new contract, which he then kind of lost. But, yeah, I mean, I think based on what he's done, I mean, we all know what he did in 2013. He took the whole league by storm and basically kind of outdueled Clayton Kershaw a couple times. But I do think that in the end, if they started today, and that's always a question, and that's the best way to look off it. You can't go, well, I know what this team's going to look like on September 30th. I have no idea what they're going to look like, except for having, like, you know, a monstrously talented bullpen. But I think right now, if they started today, even with how good Martinez has been, I think he can also be like your kind of your bridge guy for one of your starters gets bombed. You know, you can send Martinez in there and trust that he can do a good job. But I do think Waka's the guy that probably stays in there. And Waka's also a guy who seems to be good on the road and home. He doesn't have really rough Rome or home splits.
Yeah, and I think that I feel like, you know, Martinez's stuff is explosive enough that it's very effective in short doses. It's obviously effective as over the length of a game, too, don't get me wrong. But I think Waka's stuff, he can do short innings, he can do stuff, but his is not quite as dominant. I mean, it's going to take a little bit more pitching out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't need that out of the bullpen. You just need the hard thrower or the guy that can just come in and strike out a couple guys and not worry about it. So that's what I'd lean toward. But yeah, you've got to assume that Jaime Garcia is going to be healthy through the rest of the year. You're going to have to assume that Adam Wainwright doesn't want to come back. I feel fairly confident that Wainwright is not going to be back, but you know.
He's going to be a cheerleader. He's going to be the best dugout guy that you can get. I mean, as far as whatever you can do without throwing a pitch, Wainwright's going to do that very well.
Yeah. And you know, it's a good position to be in, because a lot of teams might be really pushing, really hoping that he can make that comeback. And, you know, honestly, there's not a spot for him right now. I know Adam Wainwright is dominant and very good when he's on his top of his game. But when you don't know what you're going to get out of him and he still has to build up arm strength, you know, he's probably at best going to be a reliever. And, you know, again, we don't, the relieving situation's already a difficult situation. So
yeah, and you also and you really don't want to mess him up for next year. I mean, we saw what happened with Ryan Howard when he had to go back in for more surgery on his Achilles heel. You just don't want to mess him up. I mean, right now you're hoping to have Wainwright 100%. You know, the Wainwright we all know and love on just, you know, in 2016, you know, next February. You want to have him ready for that. So you don't want to have him come back and re-injure something or overcompensate and hurt something else, especially his upper body. So, for all intents and purposes, I'm thinking about seeing him next spring.
Yeah, and I know that I think Wainwright's discussion of coming back this year is kind of like he was in 2011. The idea that it's given him something to work toward, even though it's probably not going to happen. And like you say, the even if he got to 100%, which is, it seems, well, he can't. If he got to 100%, maybe we'd have a different conversation. But if he got to 70 or 80%, I think with the Cardinals being in the position they are with such good pitching, they can afford to say, no, step back. Some teams might have to say, hey, we'll take you at 80%. But
And it's like, you'd be doing an injustice to a rotation. It's really held you up since his demise. I mean, nobody saw the rotation being this well or doing this well into August. I mean, especially when he went down in late April. You thought that my instant reaction was, okay, now the team really has to hit. Somebody has to step up, but they really pitched really well. I mean, Tyler Lyons has filled in. Tim Cooney improved with each outing. You had guys like Jaime Garcia. When Jaime Garcia is healthy, he's got a sub-2 ERA. Everybody's below 3 right now as far as having a 3.0 ERA. They're all under it, and that's just great. I mean, they keep going. And even when they kind of bend a little bit, like Waka did in the last, in 3 of his last 6 starts, I mean, they still give you a chance to win. And I really, I mean, almost ever since Martinez getting bruised up, Martinez and Waka getting bruised up by the Rockies last week, a starter really hasn't been bruised badly since I think what the Rockies did to Lackey.
Yeah, I mean, you go back, well, yeah, I don't know where the two really bad games that Carlos Martinez had. I can't remember.
I think he allowed 7, and I think Lackey allowed 8.
Well, Lackey allowed 10, I think, didn't he?
Oh, he did. I thought it was 8 earned.
I think,
as far as really just getting bruised, this rotation just doesn't really do that. I mean, they always kind of give you a chance to win. And, of course, when you got a bullpen like we got, and you have that kind of backup waiting for you, I guess you can kind of just let it rip.
Yeah, and I mean, that, if Matheny wanted to manage like Tony La Russa did in 2011, where, the starters were yanked as any time. Now, the 2011 starters were not nearly as strong as the Cardinals starters are this year, so it's less likely to happen, but it still gave you that option that, if you had an opportunity in the fourth inning to, bases loaded, the pitchers up, you went ahead and pinch hit, and you knew that the bullpen can handle it. I don't think we'll see Matheny do that. It seems pretty far off of his normal managing style. But still, to have those opportunities in the sixth inning or something, hopefully he will take advantage. Now, we saw today, Michael Walker hit for himself in the top of the seventh and pitched the bottom of the seventh, even though, and I wasn't watching it, but I was kind of looking at the comments on Twitter how the field was getting pretty yucky.
Yeah.
With the rain. I didn't read his post-game comments. It seemed a little surprising, though, that he went ahead and let Walker stay out there, especially with field conditions deteriorating.
Yeah, it's almost as bad as letting Carlos Martinez pinch run, I mean, there's so many times where Matheny, I don't know what these, I mean, Mo, I wonder, I wish I could hear what Mo's thinking, like, what are you doing putting him on first base to pinch run? I wonder if Matheny just doesn't really think about it, or he goes, he can handle it. Or Matheny, does he really want these guys? I think Matheny really cares. And it's kind of like his greatest asset and also his greatest, kind of setback as far as Matheny is. He really wants these guys to feel great out there. I think he wants them to get that 7 innings. We already heard the comments about the closer, how he wants the closer to get that stat. I think Matheny is just kind of a little obsessed with that. I think he doesn't want to pull these guys too early. We all know he leaves guys out there too long, more than pull them too early. I mean, I think right now every fan wouldn't mind if he pulled these guys a little bit earlier than expected just to rest them. But Matheny's a guy, I think he almost overextends these guys by trying to help him reach that nightly milestone. I don't know if it's 7 innings or if it's a save. I think he really kind of gambles that way, and that's one of the things that kind of throws me off of Matheny. I mean, I'm not a big Matheny critic. He's not perfect, but he's also not trying to be Whitey Herzog or Tony La Russa. I think the way he's done with the team in the past few years can't really be denied. I mean, as for when it comes to his playoff wins or just the way that these guys want to play for him. I mean, whoever's out there, these guys fight hard. And I know for any Matheny critic, they'll just laugh at me and call me crazy, but one of the things that kind of drives me up a wall is when he does kind of really force these guys in a way to go, okay, I want you to be happy with what you did, so I'm going to let you go back out there and potentially get hurt or overpitch when you don't really have to.
There are times where it does seem like the inmates are running the asylum, if you will, because of that. He will let a pitcher stay out there trying to get a win. to have that come back and blow up on him. He will, you know, we've seen him let players talk themselves into the starting lineup, even when they needed the day off.
Yeah.
There are times like that. And I think on the most part, he controls it, but, there are enough times that it does kind of seem like he's a little bit more of a player's manager than he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
That said, like I said, you can't argue with the fact that he just keeps winning too.
And he's also an ex-player, so I get that teammate. He sees these guys. And Mike Matheny is still a relatively young guy. He's very competitive. He's Mike Matheny. I mean, I think he also, there's also that player coach aspect that I don't think that he can really shred.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't discount what he brings to, the managing of the people. We saw, I think it was this week, Jimmy Rollins went back to Philadelphia, and he had some comments about Ryan Sandberg, who obviously is not there anymore, but basically boiled down to, the players couldn't play for him. They didn't trust him. He didn't manage them very well. He didn't deal with people very well. And we saw the results of that. I don't think we necessarily give Matheny enough credit at times for how he manages the clubhouse. And is that why they're 69-39? Not entirely, but is that a reason why they're there? It very well may be.
There has to be a reason why this team with all these injuries is 30 games over 500. And while we want to give credit to guys like Yadier Molina with the pitching staff, and Johnny Peralta, Randall Grichuk, you have a guy in that dugout who I think these players would basically bash through the wall for. And I know that that's in this sabermetrical world we live in, that's kind of taken for granted. People just don't, they kind of discount that, like, oh no, if you put anybody in a dugout, they'll play for him. And it's very untrue. Even from being an athlete back in high school, if you loved your coach, I mean, in baseball or hockey or football, you wanted to play extra hard and you wanted to do good by him. And I think these guys, they see that Matheny. Yadi played with Matheny a lot. Adam Wainwright remembers Matheny back as a player. I mean, a lot of these guys respect him because he's been behind the plate. He's played at the toughest position in the game. And he treats them with respect. I mean, I think a lot of managers, some managers in this league don't treat their whole roster with respect. I think they kind of treat the stars with a certain amount of respect, and they kind of dismiss the rest. And this is why Pete Cosma is still a Cardinal, because he treats every player with, the Major League Baseball respect that they deserve. And I think that can't be discounted. It just, you can't put it in the stats. You can say Mike Matheny has 39 playoff wins, and they'll go, well, it's a great team. And I go, yeah, but no. It just you can't prove it either way 100%, but you can't discount what he's done. And I know I'm rambling here because I'm not firing off any stats, so putting people to sleep here at the 30-minute mark. But I do see where you're coming from, and I do see that with the Sandberg-Matheny angle, I think these guys – do play hard for Matheny, and I think as long as he's the manager, I think that's always going to give the team a chance when they're down or when they're missing players. And I think that's one of the things that, I mean, a lot of these players love. If he asked them, I mean, they wouldn't be lying if they said, yeah, I'll do whatever it takes. If he wants me to do this, he wants me to play. Like when Matt Carpenter says, I'll hit anywhere Mike Matheny puts me, I don't think that he's lying. I think he's a guy who respects Matheny, what he's doing, and he'll bat wherever he wants to, even though he's most comfortable in a leadoff role. So I think that kind of thing can't be discounted. People just forget about it because you can't quantify it.
We're talking so much about the pitching staff and how good they are. It's again, they have to be this good because they're not getting any support. Cardinals win today 3-0, but they did it on the back of 5 hits. You ought to get 5 hits in Cincinnati just by, rolling out of bed, it seems like. They could have easily lost 2 of 3 if it wasn't for Matt Carpenter's home run in the 8th last night.
Yeah.
Meaning that they didn't have to face Aroldis Chapman down a run. They would have lost the first 2 games like that. The Brandon Moss trade, I don't think we can say it was a flop. I mean, it's only been a little over a week.
Yeah, but, 22 at bats.
Yeah, but it's not. He's not come out and put a stamp that it was a great trade either. I mean, he's got game-winning RBI on Sunday.
Yeah.
He's hit some balls that, could have carried out of maybe, you know, Cincinnati if he was hitting there.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's really seems to not quite have the rhythm that we were hoping for to kickstart this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it gets really frustrating for me last night when you have him striking out three times, then Reynolds comes in, he strikes out two times. So you have your first baseman platoon just getting whiffed. It doesn't matter if they put Will Jochany in a Reds uniform and he threw pitches up there, they would probably strike out. Or they'd find a way to. And that's just the bad thing. I mean, yeah, both these guys combined are nearing 200 strikeouts combined. It's just kind of ugly. And then I think the Cardinals kind of made this trade due to the fact that Mark Reynolds has kind of suffered a power outage. I mean, people can blame and when people blame Busch Stadium for Reynolds' power outage, well, are you the same people that are hoping that Brandon Moss all of a sudden conquers Busch Stadium? I mean, if you're trying to get a guy's power back, putting him in Busch Stadium probably isn't the recipe for success. And that's the problem with Moss. You can't really expect too much of him because in his last 30 games, his slugging percentage is .284. And I mean, I'm not going to look at the guy for a batting average. I mean, he can hit .205 Dan Uglas style. But if he cranks out, if he's hitting home runs and he's driving in runs, that's fine because that's what he's supposed to do. But he's not doing that. And yes, it's 22, but he's 3 for 22. He's got, you know, I think close to 10, maybe 8 strikeouts. He doesn't walk a lot. He drew a walk today just because I think the pitcher was just mystified at striking everybody else out. But it's one of those things where I'm not going to try to jump on it too soon. I'm going to try to wait maybe to the end of August, you know, give it a month, you know, go to maybe August 30 or 31st and see where he's at then. But first base is just kind of a black hole for this team. I mean, it's just they haven't gotten the production they needed. Reynolds is, you know, has seen his power go away. Matt Adams got hurt, but he wasn't really doing much before. And I think if people are looking to Moss to all of a sudden be a, you know, a Anthony Rizzo duplicate or even half of that, or even be like Pedro Alvarez. But people are talking about getting Pedro Alvarez. I was kind of like, no, I wouldn't mind Pedro Alvarez. He hits home runs. He can't, you know, he can't field a ground ball at first base for his life, but he was the kind of guy that I was kind of looking at, you know, kind of behind the scenes. He's a Cardinal killer. I mean, you know, Brandon Moss hasn't even been that, and it's just I love people talking a lot about his but deep fly balls, ladies and gentlemen, don't count as hits, and they're great to talk about. I mean, Ricky Horton and Al Arbasky, they could have wrote a book about it this weekend. Or this week in Cincinnati, he's hit for power. He said, yeah, but he's not hitting for power. He hasn't done it since the All-Star break. I mean, this guy has suffered a major power outage even before he came to St. Louis. And, you know, if you're trying to find your power stroke, you're not going to find it in Busch Stadium.
Yeah, I was going to say that first base had been really a black hole since Pujols left, but then they did put out, they put Alan Craig there and he was, you know, he was pretty solid in 2012, 2013.
Adams was a little bit above average, but yeah, as far as being a dual threat, a big guy, you know, and I think we're used to, and I think that's one of the drop-offs, kind of like, the withdrawal periods with Pujols is that, you know, he made a position that's so known for power, he made it electrifying for over 10 seasons, and we're all just kind of coming down off that hill going, are we ever going to hit a tree that can hit?
Well, and it goes through the whole team. I think we were so used to a guy like, you had Pujols who could hit 30. You usually had him surrounded with somebody like Beltran or Bergman or somebody else that was going to hit Holiday when he was, you know, Holiday's not quite what he was even just a few years back. And so we go from that where you've had 30, you know, some guys hitting 20, 30 home runs to now where it's Peralta and, you know, Grichuk when he gets hot. And in Peralta, even though he's leading the team in home runs, it just doesn't seem like you expect him to hit a home run when he comes up, you know? I don't know what it is. I'm more likely to expect a home run out of Grichuk. Maybe that's just because Peralta's quiet. Maybe just because those home runs just, they don't come in bunches. They just kind of, he kind of spreads them out throughout the year.
Well, he's not a Greek god either, Peralta, you know? So, you know. But yeah, I do get that. I mean, there's no way in this lineup outside of Grichuk, who I think with 550 at bats could hit 30 home runs, especially if he keeps hitting the way he is next year. I mean, outside of him, yeah. I mean, everybody in this lineup, you don't look at and go, man, I think he's going to hit it out. And you thought we got that with Mark Reynolds. The one thing he could do well was hit home runs, but even he only hit around 20 the last few years. I mean, it isn't like he's in his 44 home run days back in the day. And You know, Peralta's never been a big 30 home run guy. Hayward only hit over 20 once. I mean, Carpenter is all of a sudden trying to be like the Cardinals home run king all of a sudden. I think when Brandon Moss came here, I think Carpenter said, okay, that's it. I've been playing dead for 2 months. I'm going to break out the power stick. I mean, all this talk about, ooh, Brandon Moss has 15 home runs. Well, guess what? I'm going to get 15. You watch. I mean, and when you have Matt Carpenter providing your big pop in the leadoff role, that pretty much tells you where the power hitting days of the Cardinals have gone.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, yeah, Carpenter's up 15. He's just one behind Peralta. He's now two ahead of Grichuk. I mean, you got four players. I mean, we're here in the middle of, well, beginning of August, you know, but you've got, what, about 70 games left, probably.
Yeah.
A little less than that. And we have four Cardinals have double digit homers. I mean, that's it. And then that's, you know, counting Colton Wong at 11. I mean, that's not a huge thing. So.
Yeah, we actually got less than 60 left. Because I think we're 69 and 39. I think we're 108. So yeah, I guess that's, so we're actually getting really down to it here.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. There's going to be a time where there's no baseball, and that's not, and that's kind of coming up. I mean, can you believe how fast? I mean, I can remember when we were starting the season in early April, as we always do in Cincinnati. You know, when Carpenter, they showed the replay last night of Carpenter hitting that extra inning home run against Cincinnati on April 12th. I was like, oh man, back in April when we had Wainwright and everything was so good and everything just kind of hit the shipwreck that got rebuilt. And here we are on August 6th. And, you know, and we're rolling down the stretch. Before we know it, you know, Shop Dog, it's going to be episode number 13. And we're going to be in September. And we're going to be fried. And I'm going to be drinking too much coffee. I'm going to get an IV in my arm. And it's just going to be crazy how fast these weeks go by in baseball. And I guess it helps that they play almost every day. You know, in NFL, you have one game a week. And then you spend the next 6 days recovering from that one game. In baseball, it's a constant battle. And I guess that means it goes by really fast.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's that regular routine that you get into, and suddenly you look up and half the season's gone. But it's the same way you do your normal routine of life, I guess, and you look up and it's, you know, somehow we've passed the 4th of July and we're closer to Christmas than we are
to
the beginning of the year. So, you know, it does go by ridiculously fast.
And by the way, we are coming to the Shop Talk Christmas party this year. That is a lock. I'll be there.
There you go. You know, I don't know. And it's kind of funny that we look at this and one of the guys that is tied with nine homers, Mark Reynolds is the other one, is Jason Hayward, who actually leads the team in WAR. At least on the baseball reference site that I'm looking at. And again, you take that with whatever you want to. We had that kind of discussion on Conversations with C70 this week, if you want to listen to that one. There's that subtle plug. But
there you go.
Yeah, but Hayward, you know, it seems hard to believe. No, it doesn't seem hard to believe to some degree. I mean, he doesn't have the home runs that we thought he might have. But overall game, it's tough to say anybody's been more consistently good, as consistently good as Hayward, because he can steal, he can play defense. You know, Grichuk has a lot of that stuff but he gets streaky, he strikes out a lot.
Yeah.
Ever since Hayward kind of got out of that adjustment period and when they shifted him down in the lineup, he just been a pretty steady, you know, even if he's not hitting doubles and triples and homers, he's getting on, he's moving along on the base paths. He's doing a lot, and we're getting to that point of the year now that we're a decent lead. You're getting close to, you know, you've passed the All-Star, you've traced the trading deadline. Do you think that Mo can get a deal done with Hayward before he becomes a free agent at the end of the year?
I have made a prediction that I don't think we're going to be playing baseball on September 1st before without him being a Cardinal for another few years. I think this is going to get done pretty fast. I think Hayward has shown all what the Cardinals wanted him to show. I mean, they made that trade with the idea of setting him up here long term, and all he had to do was to see. I mean, 9 home runs, 35 RBIs, but people have to understand he's never really been a consistent big power guy. I mean, he had that one 2012 season where he had 27 home runs, he drove in 82. But now that he's kind of matured into more of a, I mean, more of a, an all-around hitter, he's got a kind of guy who's going to give you on-base percentage. He's going to hit, he's hitting 285. He's got a 430 slug, but I just think what he gives you all-around. I think Bernie Miklas wrote about it last month. I mean, I think, I mean, if anybody has any doubts, they're just not looking at everything this guy gives you. He hits doubles. He's got 18 steals. He gives you a lot of that war does come from his defense, but that shouldn't be discounted on a team that doesn't hit that well and relies on their defense and their pitching. I mean, you have a guy in right field who has a cannon who can track anything down. And those are the kind of little things that people just don't get. People, the base, who I call the baseball card mafia, just go, well, he only has 9 home runs and 35 RBIs. Well, you know, he's also has an ability to draw a walk. He also only has 67 strikeouts, which is not as much as some other guys in the team. And it's just one of those things where I think he was maybe for some people mishyped. I think, you know, maybe overhyped for this big power bat. And yes, it'd be nice if he hit 25 home runs, but I didn't expect that from Hayward. All I wanted, and I think Tara Wellman asked this in her preseason question in the big round table. I think she asked, what do you want from Hayward to be? And I think right around, you know, 15 home runs, you know, 75 RBIs, and then all the rest of the stuff he does. Like he gets on base. I mean, he can steal bases. He gives you the best defense in right field you can get. And he's only 25, and he's shown the ability to hit home runs. Maybe next year when he gets comfortable, he might hit 20 home runs again. I mean, it's not like he can't do it. It's just to expect it would be it's just not the right thing to do. And I think Mozeliak, and I think he was quoted today on CBS and 920 Inside STL with Tim McKernan. I think he said that we do want to sign him now. I mean, I think it may not be an exact quote, but he said something about, I mean, he's shown us all he needs to show us, and we're going to try to get this deal done. And I think that's all Mo needed to see. I mean, I asked him in April at Blogger Night. I says, I mean, what is the timetable for you guys talking to him about a contract? And he said All-Star break. And here we are on August 6th, and I just don't think we're going to be into September without him having a long-term deal. And I think the way contracts are going right now, I mean, I think Hayward is worth, you know, 18, 20 million. And the first thing that came to my mind when that TV deal was announced was it's time to sign Hayward, because you have that big money deal. You can backload the contract. You can do whatever you want. But I think Hayward has shown the Cardinals and me, I mean, you know, I nobody wants to hand a guy a 6-7 year deal, even if he's 22 or 25 or whatever. But I think he's done enough for me to see this guy get signed long term.
Yeah, I think so. Like you say, that TV money is going to come in pretty handy here, because they're going to have to be signing some of these guys, Walker, Martinez, people like that. They're going to have to extend those, but.
Even Grichuk, you know, I mean, if he keeps doing it next year.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to watch, because, you know, we thought we had something with Alan Craig, too, and that fell off. I feel like I'm getting off distracted a little bit, but I kind of still have this feeling that Grichuk could be a flash in the pan type thing, that he's going to have a good
year. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
But he's young. He's making improvements. He's walking a little bit more. So, yeah, I don't rush into a contract with him, but, you know, maybe if he does another year like this one next year, then, you know, maybe you start talking about it. But Hayward, you go ahead.
He's a comic book, so we just hope there's more in the series behind it.
Yeah, this is true. but Hayward, I think that, you know, he's not represented by Boris, I don't believe. He seems to be in a situation that he enjoys. We don't know that for sure. He's not necessarily been the most vocal person since he's been in St. Louis, so you never know that for sure. But it's a situation where everybody seems to enjoy having him around. He's been a very productive thing. So, you know, could he get more on the free agent market? Yeah, probably.
Definitely.
It's just going to boil down to, does he want the guarantee that he can come back, or does he want to at least shop himself around? Now, it could be that he goes out, shops himself around, and he still comes back to the Cardinals for a little bit less, depending on what they're offering.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I think I'm like you. I'd like to see him locked up long term, but now I just don't know. Players hit that free agency.
I think he gets more expensive as the weeks go by, and especially like what if he goes on a tear and all of a sudden he has like 13 home runs and he's got 45 RBI and he's just, you know, what if he goes on that big power tear and he like he did it? I mean, I know when we were playing in Miami, he was hitting home runs left and right. And that's one of the things. He hasn't hit a home run in a while. Yeah. He could really hit that number 10 and make everybody just go, okay, sign him, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I think that he's going to get more expensive because, you know, the outfielder market's not really going to be huge. You got, you know, Cespedes, you got Justin Upton. I think that he's going to be able to command more money, I mean, a lot more money from other teams. And but I think Mozeliak, you know, he's always so calm and cool. He's not going to overthink this. I think he's going to make him a good offer. I think it's going to come down to, hey, we're going, you know, do I just want to sign this and let's just play ball? Or do I want that stress of going into the offseason and weighing four or five different offers? I think if I were Hayward and it's a good deal, and I think the Cardinals are going to offer him good money. I mean, people have to understand whatever. I mean, maybe they're different producers, but, you know, what Holiday got in 2009 was $17 million a year. So you kind of go 6 years ahead, and I think it is going to be a little higher. But I think Hayward's age and what he can do all around for you, I mean, they make the money worth it. I mean, the Cardinals aren't signing an old guy here. They're signing a very young ball player who's capable of doing a lot of things on a baseball field. So I think it does kind of come down to Hayward. I mean, if the Cardinals come to him in the next week or two, here's a six, you know, 7 year deal. Let's lock you up long term. I think it's going to come down to, hey, we're going, you know, I think, is this the best thing for me, or do I want to try to hit more and, you know, go into September, late September? I mean, what if he has just a very rough 2 months and he fizzles in the playoffs? And, you know, he has to understand that his value is just compared to the market and what other people are getting. You know, do the Cardinals, I think, want to sign him sooner. But I agree with other people saying that the only person that could really hold this up is Hayward himself. The Cardinals want to get him because right now, as I said, he's kind of the cheapest. I mean, he goes on a big power streak and he goes, and the more weeks go by, I think his price goes up. I mean, I think his price goes up anyway. But I think it's going to come down to him wanting to accept the Cardinals' deal or wait.
Yeah, you did point out he hasn't hit a home run since June. In that time, since he hit his last home run, he's played 36 games, 34 starts. He is hitting .299 in that stretch, and he does have 9 doubles and 2 triples. So he's been productive. He scored 17 runs. He can be productive. He's stolen 8 bases. Be productive without hitting the ball out of the ballpark. Now,
yeah,
it would be nice if he did. Obviously,
very
nobody's gonna turn those down, but. You know, that just doesn't seem to be the MO of this team right now. And so hopefully we will see that. But, yeah, it'd be nice if he could get the deal done. I'm still kind of hesitant. I think he's going to be a Cardinal next year. I just don't know when that deal's going to get signed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if he had better protection than Yadier Molina, he might hit some more home runs. But I do think that he's going to end up, you know, 13 to 15 home runs. I mean, I think he's going to do everything he needs. I just really think it comes down to him, man. I think the Cardinals want to sign him. The way that Mozeliak's talked about it when he's asked, I mean, I think he wants to do it. I think it just comes down to. I mean, I always want to know, like, how does that work? I mean, you know, Hayward's on the road, his agent's talking to him, and they're calling him, and, you know, he's out of getting ready to start. He goes, you want to do this for her? Let me hit in this game first, and I'll call you after the game, agent. Don't worry about it. And it's so complicated when it's in the season, but I do think the Cardinals, it's in their best interest to try to reach something before the end of the season with Jason Hayward.
Yeah, I have a feeling that they do most of their work. Well, of course, I don't think the agent comes to him until it's, you know, pretty close to done. But, you know, I think they probably do a lot of that during when they're at home. They probably don't do as much when they're on the road, which can be a good thing, I guess. It gives them a little less distraction when they're out there. Let's see. What else we got here?
You know, somebody brought something up to me the other day about Matt Holliday and about – you know, with the outfield situation, and this is going, we're going to jump ahead a little bit in the future here, but people are asking, you know, so if Steve Biscotti stays and he hits well, and you have Randall Grichuk in center and you sign Hayward, when Holiday's option comes up in 2017, is that a done deal that the Cardinals pick that up, or is that kind of, is there some questions in that?
I think that most likely, given what Holiday has meant to this organization, that if it was a yes-no question, they would pick the option up.
Yeah, now, that's where I think, too.
I would not be surprised if they, depending on what Holiday does next year, especially how, you know, if he starts getting hurt a little bit more like he did this year, you know, do they maybe sign him to like a 2-year deal, kind of like what they did, I think, with Chris Carpenter, where they kind of bought out that option year with an extra year, and made the salary a little bit lower, something like that. I don't think Matt Holiday is going to play a game in a different uniform. Let's put it that way.
That's what I think too. As much as I want to think that, you know, yeah, the Cardinals could maybe go, well, here, let's try to get something for him in a shocking trade. I just don't see it happening because of what he means to the organization. And I just think that, you know, I mean, I don't think he's going to play first base, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry. But I just think that as much as – I mean, it's not a bad question to ask when people – when they ask me, I was like, oh, that's actually something to really think about. I mean, we're thinking, okay, Steve Biscotti doesn't get traded between now and then. And Steve Biscotti may be playing first base next year with Matt Adams if that is the case. And – if Randall Gritchick keeps hitting and Hayward, I think it's just so contingent on so many things, but I'm like you. I can't see, I mean, part of me can see Holiday going to an AL club and being a DH left fielder. I just don't think the Cardinals want to let him go just because of guys like him and Yadi and Wainwright. They mean so much to the organization and they saw that depart in Pujols. Now, you know, Holiday's not on Pujols' level, but as far as what he means to the city, as far as the guy that took over Pujols' golf and tournament and his foundation, you know, hey, you know, Holiday means a lot to the city, even off the field. And I think the Cardinals take all that into consideration. And I can see him doing something like that, maybe buying out that option or giving him a little bit, maybe even a little bit more, with maybe give him some more incentives. Say if you play 150 and you reach this or that, you know, they kick in. But as much as it's an interesting thing to talk about, I can't see Matt Holiday not retiring a Cardinal.
Yeah, it seems strange to think that. I mean, players do move, but again, Holiday is going to be quite far along. You know, even if at the end of this contract, he's only going to have probably a year or two left.
Yeah.
It would seem. I mean, some players can get up there to their 40s or so, but I don't know that Matt Holiday wants to do that, so...
He's also one of those guys. He's not a guy that wants to, you know, change cities when you're 37 years old. I don't think that he's the kind of guy that's going to be like Beltran and then take the 3-year deal to go to the Yankees and, you know, just to try to. Now, of course, he was trying to win a World Series, which Matt Holiday has already done. But I mean, I think it's just one of those things where you just have to recognize that Matt Holiday, I don't think he wants to go anywhere. And if it comes down to taking a little bit less money, I think he'll stay in St. Louis for that.
Probably so. And I think, like I said, Wainwright and Yadi are in similar situations. They're not likely to go anywhere else either. Now, I will say the Cardinals are really stuffing their roster. They're getting to the point, you know, even now, you know, when we were talking about them making maybe another trade last week, they were going to have to basically start taking stuff off the major league roster because there's just no place for these players to play.
Yeah.
And when you look at in next year's outfield, and this is, of course, you know, way ahead of things, and we can talk more about it at a later date, but you do look at the fact that, you know, right now you have Borges, Jay, you have Holiday and Hayward, and then you have Gritchick, and then you have Piscotty, and, you know, how do all these guys fit in? Now, obviously, it doesn't, you know, Jay and Borges probably aren't both back. Maybe neither one of them are back.
You know, almost to me, I think that the fact that John Jay and Matt Adams got hurt, I think that kind of hurt Mo a little bit at the deadline. Because I think if they're both doing what they usually do, I mean, they could be trade chips. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, I even said that I didn't expect Peter Borges and John Jay to finish it, that both have both finished the team or finished this year on the Cardinals. I thought one of them would be traded. And I thought, you know, whoever had more value at the time, he'd be gone. But then, you know, Jay gets hurt. His value is pretty much just depleted at least until the offseason when he, or even next year when he can be fully healthy again and that wrist is going. And, you know, I mean, when Matt Adams went down, I mean, I think with all the injuries, the Cardinals have found a way to win games, but they've also hindered their GM as far as his trade chips.
Yeah, I don't know what Mo's going to do in the offseason. It would almost seem like he's going to have to start dealing some people off if he can get anything for them. Because again, you look at first base, you've got, I don't guess Reynolds is probably not under contract, but you still have Adams and Moss, who will be, plus Piscotty as a possibility. The bullpen has got a lot of arms out there. Not counting people like Marco Gonzalez that you may want to bring up or Reyes maybe by the middle of season of next year.
The minute I start thinking about it, I think that at the very least you can, even with Moss there, I think you can have a platoon if Holiday goes back to left and you have Grichuk in center and Hayward in right, you can have a platoon between Piscotty and Adams at first base.
Yeah, that means you have to non-tender Moss, which can be done, could be done, but that also means you gave up Rob Kaminsky for, 2 months of a guy.
Or do you keep him on for, to be like that backup in left and first, maybe? Right, there's so many people on this roster. Yeah. You have Tommy Pham, who's kind of like getting to be that older outfielder who may have some juice elsewhere. Yeah, like you said, Peter Borges, John Jay. This is going to be an interesting offseason, not to see who comes in, but to see who goes.
Yeah. Well, you look at the rotation. You've got Wainwright, Lynn.
Garcia and the option.
Garcia and or Wainwright, Lynn, Martinez, and Walker are the four for next year. Slackey's a free agent at the end of this year, but do you try to re-sign him? Do you try to exercise the option on Garcia? Are you looking at Marco Gonzalez for that spot? What do you do with Tim Cooney and Tyler Lyons? Do you still want to have a spot for Alex Reyes when he comes up? Do you get into the free agent market, and get a pitcher that fills that spot and trade something? There's lots of different options.
And there is, and for me, I think Lackey's going to want that big parachute deal. And I think kind of a deal like Beltran got with the Yankees, kind of like that 2 or 3 year deal that he can go out on. And, I can't see him at his age with the way that he's going to pitch this year, accepting another 1 year deal from the Cardinals, or I don't see the Cardinals offering him a 2 or 3 year deal. So I think I'm kind of thinking this is Lackey's swan song with the Cardinals, especially if we can just, do something kind of small, like win the World Series. I think it'll be fine, but I do wonder about guys like Marco and Jaime. You have Alex Reyes, who's pretty much going to be, he's at Springfield right now. I can see him starting next season at Memphis, but not spending too much time there. He is young, and it depends on need. But then, you have all these guys. You have Tyler Lyons. You have Tim Cooney, who are pretty much, done all they could do at the minor league level. So even on the pitching side, like you said, you have all these guys, and your bullpen is stacked. Are Cishek and Broxton, are they under control for next year? Is their contract expire this year?
Cishek is under control. He have to go through arbitration, but he has team control for next year. Broxton has an option for next year. I think it's got a $2 million buyout, which is what Milwaukee sent along with the deal. I think they sent us to send along $2 million so we could pay for that buyout if they wanted to. I think it's a $9 million option if you pick it up. So you're probably not going to, but
yeah, probably not. Expensive
there, but does that mean you don't try to sign him and bring him back in? I don't know. Mo's got, Mo has been a bit of a hoarder in his time as a GM. He's hoarded pitching prospects and not necessarily traded them off. He's kind of hoarded some offensive prospects and not ever traded them off. And now, with all the moves that he's done this year, he's been able to really maximize that 60-day DL. But there's going to come a time next year when everybody's healthy and everybody's under contract, and then what do you do?
Yeah.
Are there a lot of non-release or non-tenders? Are there a lot of people that, get traded off? I don't know. Could be an interesting offseason, but we got to get there first.
Is there going to be a big trade that involves a guy like Marco and Piscotty to land a big pitching prospect? It's so crazy, and you're right. Even think about it. We just got done with the trading deadline, so now that's kind of where you shut your brain off and go, okay, I'm not thinking about trades or anything for a while. And especially when Hayward does get signed, then it's just all full speed ahead with this season. But I think we got plenty to be thinking about with a series in Milwaukee coming up, and you got Pittsburgh on the horizon. And once again, while the pitching matchups I'm looking at in Milwaukee favor the Cardinals completely, but we know that doesn't mean anything with this team. Because they could possibly get two hit by me or Choctaw these days. So, you know, the Milwaukee's won three games in a row, so they're basically playing spoilers right now.
This is true, and we'll see how that goes this weekend. We got a couple of Twitter questions. Let's go ahead and answer those. We are running to the hour mark, so let's go ahead and hit those. First question, who's been the most underrated piece of the 15 team? Who do you think?
You know, the most underrated, oh, gosh, it's just, there's so many guys that are, I think underrated, I still go with Kevin Sechrist. I think what he's done for the bullpen, I mean, this is a guy, folks, who was pretty much not really doing that well next year. I mean, he had the great 2013 season, and then he hurt his forearm last year, and he was never right. This guy is kind of freakish this year. He has, 62 strikeouts in 50 innings. He's got a very low whip. He's closed five games. I mean, he's done so many things. I mean, if Trevor Rosenthal is the guy with the 32 saves and also having a pretty good season, I mean, Kevin Sechrist is kind of like the Achilles heel of that bullpen as far as being able to hold the game, close it. He can pitch in the seventh, the eighth, the ninth, and extra innings. It's just it's the comeback flavor. I mean, to look at his whip last year was 1.58. This year it's 1.09. He's holding guys to a 2.06 batting average. He's got 62 strikeouts, as I said, with only 18 walks. He doesn't allow a lot of home runs. He's pitched a lot of innings, and he kind of just seems to be getting better. Now, as far when it comes to throwing to second and third base, I don't trust him that much. But other than that, my underrated player right now, as far as the most underrated, and I mean, he gets talked about, but I just think as far as not getting talked about enough is Kevin Sechrist.
Yeah, it's hard to ask that question of guys that spend so much time, talking about players, writing about players, because I feel like we've talked and written about just about everybody on this roster. So, underrated, boy. Some degree, I think it is still Hayward, just because he's not hitting, putting up the gaudy power numbers and things of that nature. I think most smart fans realize what's going on, but I think there's still a faction of the fan base that may not fully understand how good he's been for this team, what he's meant to it. That would probably be the guy I'm thinking of. Lackey may also get a little bit less credit. I mean, he does, we often talk about, the Martinez and Walker and Garcia and things of that nature. But, Lackey's been just outstanding this year.
I think Lackey's most surprising as far as just the way that he's held up. I mean, I put the stat on Twitter the other night as far as just having, he's got, 14 starts of pitching at least seven innings and allowing three earned runs or less. I kind of call it a high quality start, pitching seven innings and given three runs or less. He's done that 14 times, and he's got 17 quality starts. He leads the team in both those categories. He's just kind of been a horse. I mean, when Waino went down, I thought it'd be Lance Lynn that kind of rose to the occasion. Lance Lynn's had a good season, and his win-loss doesn't really show it. But John Lackey, as far as even improving his performance on the road, I mean, the other night in Cincinnati, he has that rough start, but he goes six and he gives you a solid. He gives the Cardinals a chance to climb back in it. They just ran into a guy called Chapman and had a few issues.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just what Lackey's done as far as I think in the last 2 months on the road. I mean, ever since that Colorado start, which is basically everything we always mention with Lackey, because it's like, well, ever since that horrible start in Colorado where he almost lost his mind and couldn't cover first base and was shouting at everybody. Even the poor people in the stands selling popcorn, he was shouting at them. But ever since then, his road and home, I mean, the splits haven't been that crazy. I mean, I think you said if you take out those two starts, I mean, his ERA is even better. And as far as being able to pitch good on the road, I think that's been a good surprising aspect of the 2015 season.
Yeah, we don't think we expect him to be able to do quite as much there. Other question was, extremely early take on the three St. Louis Cardinal trades. Cause we've only had a week or so, a little bit more for Cishek. But let's, give him a grade anyway, because why not? Cishek for, and I've drawn a blank on who they traded off for him.
I almost want to say it was a hitter. I think it was low A ball outfielder. I think his name was Malik.
No, that Malik Carrymore was the guy that went for Broxton.
Oh, who did, oh man, was it a pitcher? I am okay. I'm gonna draw this thing up. I'm gonna see who we got.
Because I'm on my yard today. I'm barely awake as it is. So anyway, as Dan looks it up, I would say that trade's probably a B right now. As I think you were talking about earlier, Cichik is a little concerning still. That delivery, when it's on, it's on. When it's not, he seems like he's throwing a lot of pitches outside and not really giving the batters much to look at, doing some walks and stuff. But he's been pretty solid. I think he's given up maybe a run. I like the options that he brings to the back of the bullpen. And like I said, I can't even remember who he was traded for. So
he came to the team for AA right-hander Kyle Bearclaw.
Oh, that's right, Bearclaw.
Bearclaw is 25.
That I had never heard of before the trade. Yeah, so.
He said 25-year-old, seventh-round pick from the 2012 draft. He didn't have bad numbers this year, but I'm not sure where he's going to find time to pitch in the next, like, 6 years.
Yeah, well, and he's a 25-year-old at AA. I had just gotten called up to AA, too, and it had control issues. So, yeah, that's a lottery ticket for the Marlins, and I don't think we're going to miss him. So, yeah, I'd say that's probably a B there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, I think it's – I mean, and that's a good grade. I think that he does give you a lot of options, and I was really impressed last night. Last night I was a little worried when he came in that pitcher's ballpark late in the game. You know, he really just had that one bad outing against Colorado on Sunday where he threw the wild pitch and allowed the guy to score in Garcia's game, which was paid really just a bad inning. Other than that, I mean, he's pitched pretty good, lights out. I mean, as far as just shutting teams down, I mean, he had a couple good successful innings, I guess in the first two games of this Red Series. I mean, he pitches, I mean, it's just with me, it's his ability to work deep counts and kind of get into trouble. And this is a guy I would not want to see with the bases loaded in a tie game. Let's put it that way. I do think that he gives you a lot of levels of an asset as far as being able to close or hold a game, come into anywhere in the game. And, you know, he's been very good, you know, in the last 2 months, you know, after a very rocky start in April, May. So I do think B's a good grade as far as Cichik. I mean, you know, and it'll be good to see these guys get stretched out in the coming weeks against, you know, division rivals like the Pirates, and to see him face off against the Giants. And, you know, when it comes to trades, especially relievers, as we noted earlier, they just don't pitch enough to really give them a solid grade. You kind of have to go maybe in, you know, early mid-September and go, okay, so how have they done after a whole month, which would maybe be about maybe 8 or 9, maybe 10 innings at the most. But I think right now, I think a B is a good grade for Cichik.
All right, second trade was Moss for Kaminsky. What do you think?
You know, Moss, I had to give him a C, and I'm going to be nice because I do see that he can, that he has the ability to break out. I mean, the strikeouts are a bad thing. He hasn't, he constantly looks fooled. I mean, last night against, I think, three different Reds pitchers, he just looked clueless. But then you see a guy who did. I will give him the benefit of the doubt. He did drive the ball in a pitcher's ballpark at Busch Stadium. He had the big hit. I think a walk-off hit kind of gives you buys you a couple days. But, I mean, I'll give him a C. Because as far as what was expected, I didn't expect this guy to come in and really break the bank and give the Cardinals a big power boost just based off what he's done the last 30 games. He's been in kind of a power decline. But I'll give him a C. I think the walk-off win kind of keeps him from a D. And the fact that he's, you know, going to get a chance. And I mean, his bat's going to get a chance to do some damage in some hitters' ballpark here pretty soon.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. And, you know, I know Kaminsky was a pretty steep price to pay.
Yeah.
But, you know, pitching means less to the Cardinals than it does to probably anybody else because they have so many. I mean, you're looking at a guy that's probably not going to make the majors for another 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, and really, I think what Mo even said, I mean, I think teams know when they're dealing with the Cardinals that they can ask for a little bit more because they know the Cardinals are a great team and they know the Cardinals have the pitching to go around. I mean, the other teams are looking at the Cardinals right now in pure frustration because the Cardinals have lost. They have only had half a season of Jaime at best. They have lost to Wainwright, and they're still leading the league in pitching. And I think that teams do – I think that comes into consideration. And these are for the people that think, well, David Price went to the Tigers for Tubi, but that doesn't mean the Cardinals, the price for the Cardinals would have been the same. I think these guys have individual prices for the different teams. When they're talking to Mozeliak, they know they're talking to the kingdom, the gatekeeper of the kingdom of great talented young pitching. So I think the price is going to be high. And well, I didn't really love the trade. I kind of wrote unfavorable columns about it, and I stand behind it. I do think that Kaminsky was going to be blocked here for a little while.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking. I just, you know, I've used the phrase time value of prospects a couple times.
Yeah.
This week. And that idea that, you know, a win today could mean more than, you know, 10 wins 5 years from now, because you may need that win to get into the playoffs, or you may need that win to win the World Series. And in 5 years, you know, maybe the Cardinals are down for some reason, and so his wins don't mean that much. Now, again, Cleveland could really develop him. Cleveland could win the deal, but I think that when you look at a guy that wasn't exactly close to the majors and you get a chance to trade him off, I think the Holiday deal probably made Mo pay a little bit more when he, you know, with Holiday going down.
Yeah, but, I think for a team like that didn't have a lot of pitching, to trade a guy like Kaminsky would be kind of crazy. But I think just with the Cardinals and their depth of pitching, and you know, you're seeing it. You're seeing it every month with this team. They're bringing up somebody different, and he's doing great in a bullpen role like Tui Valala. Or Cooney comes up, recovers after that bad start against Philly, and he pitches two very important games on the road against the Cubs and Pirates. You're seeing how these guys are developed. You're seeing Marco Gonzalez getting stronger. I mean, that guy's, you know, going to be ready to come back here in the next couple weeks. So you look at that and you go, yeah, well, Kaminsky was drafted high. He was rated high. I think it's just a need. I think it comes down to the Cardinals needed a bat and the Cleveland Indians needed a pitcher.
Pretty much. All right, and the last one, it's Broxton for the elite Clary Moore. Again, a prospect I wasn't very familiar with. He seems to have, I think, just recently moved to the outfield, and as he did drop down the rankings somewhat. Broxton's been very good, and we've talked about it so far, that the idea was to give Matheny some veteran options and rest everybody else. I think probably it's a B+, A- type of thing. I think Mo got what he needed, and he didn't give up a whole lot.
Yeah, I was going to say B+ too. I think what you expected from Broxton, I mean, the ERA wasn't great, but you got to understand ERA with a reliever is so bad, because if they have one bad outing, their ERA just jumps up. So as far as what Broxton's done since the All-Star break, I mean, he's pitched very well. I mean, he's still, as it was pointed out by, I'm going to like reference Bernie Nichols about two times in podcast, people. But you know, I mean, he really dives into what was making this guy tick. And you know, he still was able to strike guys out. And that's a big thing. Even throughout his troubles early on, Broxton can still strike somebody out. He's got a good slider, a good change. He's got a good fastball. He still has everything working. Nothing's starting to break down. So when he got traded over, I was kind of excited. This is a guy that we faced with the LA and the Milwaukee, and even a little bit with the Reds. But yeah, I mean, he's come over and he's pitched great innings. He's striking guys out a lot. I think last night he struck out the side. Yeah, I mean, you know, he had a little trouble today, but you know, you get a tight strike zone. Sometimes guys suffer. I mean, he didn't allow any damage. The guys came in after him, got the job done. But I think Bronx is going to be. See, I have higher hopes for him than I have for Cechek, just because he's just a straightforward power pitcher, and he's a guy that's closed. He's pitched. He's pitched against the Central Division a lot. In the last couple years, I mean, he's very familiar with these teams. So, yeah, I think a B+. I mean, once again, we're grading this guy off about 3.3 2/3 innings, basically. So, it's not even, you know, it's not too much. But as far as what I've seen from Broxton, I think that trend that he carried from Milwaukee, as far as pitching very well in the last 2 weeks after the All-Star break, I think he's continued that in the St. Louis Cardinals uniform.
All right, well, let's go ahead and try to wrap this up. We are getting a little bit late in the night, and obviously we could go forever.
We could.
I guess it's time for us to get Dan's movie picks for the week. Dan, what you got this week?
Well, you have another superhero flick, and everything that I've heard people about Fantastic Four is that it really shouldn't have happened. And my good friend, like, I mean, since I've been down in Arkansas, I don't get to see these movies in advance like I did in St. Louis. So I kind of have to see him with the crowd and after they come out. But I lean on a couple critics and a couple critics that I really trust who actually went into this movie really with expectations that it could be something different and just kind of came out disappointed. And the fact that Fantastic Four has had some development issues. I mean, the director, Josh Trank, was kind of hasn't really spoken too great about the film, and there wasn't even a Stan Lee cameo, which is just horrible, if you ask me. But, and you know, I had my hopes up for this, folks. I mean, I thought with Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, and Kate Mara, it was going to be good, but from what I hear, it doesn't really do much with the cast. It's kind of a, you know, the action scene's not good. As my friend said last night, Max Fosey is his name. If you need a St. Louis opinion or any opinion on movies, you can follow him at Max on Movies. He's pretty much kind of like, you know, my heel when I don't see a movie. But he said, really, even when these four people get the powers, the movie even takes a turn for the worst. And the effects aren't that good. And the Thing supposedly doesn't have pants, so it kind of gets crazy. But it kind of sounds to me like a DVD. It sounds to me like a movie that's not worth your $10. It's more like worth $1.50 at Redbox. The other movie that I'm going to see tomorrow morning is The Gift. And it's got Jason Bateman. It's directed and written by Joel Edgerton. He's kind of a very somewhat known actor. He was in The Great Gatsby. He was in Warrior. He's kind of new. He's kind of an Australian actor who's just breaking in. But it supposedly shows a different side of Jason Bateman. We all know him from Arrested Development, Horrible Bosses, but it supposedly shows him in more of a serious role as he plays this family guy who has this unexpected visit from one of his old buddies from high school. And it's kind of got thriller aspects. It's got a little bit of a horror thing going on. That's the movie I've been kind of waiting for. Joel Edgerton plays this friend called Gordo. It kind of comes into Bateman's life and kind of messes it up a little bit. He doesn't really seem to leave, and seems to have a connection to Bateman from the past that Bateman's wife doesn't know about in the movie. So it's kind of one of those mystery things. And Fosey gave that the thumbs up. So while no movie really gives me a great pleasure to go this weekend, I'm going to go watch The Gift. But if you need something sound, something that I have seen, Mission Impossible 5 was as good as I thought it was. Tom Cruise does it again. He's 53, but he likes to hang off airplanes because he's just, you know, I guess a very bored 53-year-old. But it's a very exciting movie. I mean, these movies to me just keep getting better and better. And, you know, you got Ving Rhames, you got Rebecca Ferguson, a very beautiful and able Swedish actress who kind of holds her own with Cruise. You have great the plane stunt is the least of the stunts. They also race on motorcycles and dive into water tanks. And, you know, it's basically whatever Tom wants to do. And if Tom wants to keep doing this, I'm ready. I'll even bring his crutches to the set for Mission Impossible 8. So if I had to give you something sound, I'd say Mission Impossible 5. But if you want to go out on a limb, maybe go watch The Gift this weekend.
All right. Well, there you go. So that's Dan's movie pick.
Dan's movie pick. Enough baseball. You know, one day we'll have a baseball film to discuss. But there seems to have not been any good baseball movies this year. Last year we had Million Dollar Arm, and this year we haven't had much. But, you know, when Star Wars comes out in December, we are going to donate a whole podcast to that.
Well, it's a possibility.
It's going to be epic.
Yeah, we haven't. I mean, they had 42 a couple years ago. Yeah, Million Dollar Arm last year. They tend to come in spurts, I guess, baseball movies do, and they usually come out probably right before the season starts, but somewhere in that nature.
Oh, I will say, people, that coming up on HBO, if you have HBO, Will Ferrell's little spring training thing is going to be mm-hmm. coming out, I think, in early September. The trailer is, of course, if it's Will Ferrell, it's goofy, it's funny. He spent time with 10 different teams, and it's not the Cardinals. He went to the Cubs and the Reds and the A's and the Angels. He spent a little time with each team, and it's basically him just, you know, trying to swing a bat, trying to throw a ball. He talks about, you know, people are going to remember the name Will Ferrell. Just, it's hard. I'm a Will Ferrell fan, and even if you're not, I think you're going to want to watch this because it's basically him trying to pull a Kevin Costner and actually look convincing on a baseball field, but it's all done for laughs, and that comes on HBO, I think, in early September.
That was actually the question I wanted to ask Mo at UCB weekend if I had been able to go was, you know, Ferrell did this in the Cactus League, and he hit, he didn't hit all the teams, but almost all the teams of the Cactus League. If he had done it in the Grapefruit League, and if the Cardinals had had any say in the matter, because I have a feeling – it was one of those things that was arranged through Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball, you know, told the teams they were going to do it. But if they had any say in the matter, would they have wanted to? Because I think it was Kansas City that was kind of glad that they didn't have that circus show up on their doorstep. I think that Ned Yost said that they were glad they weren't part of it. I kind of have a feeling that the Cardinals would not want to be in that, even at spring training. I think they take their stuff, and for better or for worse, I think they take their stuff serious enough that they would probably not want the distraction.
Yeah, I remember when Showtime was doing a series called The Franchise, and I think they really came to the Cardinals, Showtime, and said, hey, and I think it was after they won the World Series in 2011, and I think they even approached them after 2012, hey, do you want us to come do it? And I think Mo and the Cardinals said no, and I don't think they're really kind of up for that kind of thing, and it's not really, you know, that we're trying to hack the Houston Astros. It's not that. It's not that, I promise. But I just think – I think it's more – it's not a privacy thing. It's just kind of – it is a circus show when you bring a guy like Will Ferrell and his team there, and he had HBO, big – you know, I mean, they're, you know, a lot of cameras. I mean, if you watch Hard Knocks or any sports show on HBO, I mean, these cameras, I mean, they bring a lot of people, and it's a lot of stress. And for a team like the Cardinals that you know, kind of does value their privacy and kind of like – I mean, they're a great baseball team. They're a team that's constantly in the playoffs, and their expectations are high, so I don't think they really be up for it. I'm sure the other – and that's not discounting the other teams. I mean, it probably came to them, hey, it'll give us a little bit of exposure. It's fun. It keeps things loose. But I think it would have been funny if he came to St. Louis. I think to see him bother John Lackey would have been worth an episode by itself, just to see Will Ferrell sit next to John Lackey's locker and, like, steal his cowboy hat. Or I try to ask Lance Lynn, you know, what the meaning of life is, and just get Lance Lynn's answer on that. But, I mean, while it's kind of amusing, I'm not surprised, even if it was brought to them, if they even would have said – they probably would have said no.
Yeah, I think so. So, all right. Well, that's nine innings, if you will.
Nine innings.
In the book. We'll flip over to double digits next week. Cardinals – have Milwaukee this weekend, and then they have an off day on Monday, followed by three against Pittsburgh. Three that, you know, that could make a difference. I mean, if the Cardinals
can
go in there and win two of three against the Pirates, you know, push the lead out to
maybe double digits.
Yeah,
I mean,
The Pirates are playing the Dodgers this weekend, so that
and tomorrow, folks. I tell you what, if you're watching the. You know, the Cardinals are going to be playing the Brewers, but you got a great pitching matchup with Kershaw and Gerrit Cole out there at 6:05 in Pittsburgh. But yeah, I mean, I think if the Dodgers can do us a favor and we can knock around the Brewers, that lead could be close to seven or eight games, and you come into that series and you have a chance once again, like you did before the All-Star break, to push them down. I mean, as you climb in August and September, I will say for people that are going to that Miami Marlins series after the Pittsburgh series, no Giancarlo Stanton. His recovery from a broken hand is kind of going slower than expected.
Well, and there's no reason for him to rush back. To
no, not really.
that's really not much without him. So
it'd be kind of cool to watch Jose Fernandez, though. Oh, if I was in St. Louis and I knew which game he was pitching, that kid is so much fun to watch. He's like, if you happen to get him and Martinez in a game, that's mm-hmm. gonna. That's ESPN worthy. They should just move the cameras. You don't need John Kruk and Curt Schilling. Just move Dan Shulman into St. Louis, and he could do that game.
Yeah, that would be an interesting matchup. So, yeah, we'll see how the Cardinals do, and hopefully they can kind of, like I said, push that lead out a little bit and make the last 6 weeks or so fairly comfortable. So, for Dad, I'm Daniel. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.